What's going on, everybody? It's your buddy, it's your pal, Spaz Phoenix, the YWC Reality Check, back again with another episode of NXT Rewind. This time we're looking at NXT TakeOver Respect 2015. We're going back to Wednesday, October 7th, 2016, back at Full Sail University, Winter Park, Florida, with the ever-popular attendance of 400+, according to Wikipedia. The themes for the show were Throne and Happy Song, both by Bring Me the Horizon. This was the second last TakeOver in Full Sail. We went to Brooklyn. We talked about Brooklyn in the last episode. It was awesome. We're back to Full Sail for this one. After this, it kind of gets messy because we get TakeOver London, which is huge, not only a big arena show, but also taking the NXT brand outside of the United States. Then we get TakeOver Dallas, which was right before that year's WrestleMania. And then we come back for that one that we always make fun of. It's TakeOver, TakeOver the End, TakeOver the End of the Beginning, depending on who you talk to, in June of 2016. The commentators for this show are Rich Brennan, Byron Saxton, and Corey Graves. The opening video, obviously, centers around Respect. The Dusty Classic is based on their respect for Cody Rhodes. The main event between Bayley and Sasha Banks, the Iron Woman that we'll talk about later, is all about respect. But we gotta talk about the Dusty Classic in the main event, because this show kind of broke the mold. I've said it a lot when we talk about current pay-per-views, when we talk about old takeovers. There was a mold. You got one match per title, and then maybe one or two fillers to fill out five or six matches. Now, that doesn't include, obviously, pay-per-views like War Games, which completely set a different standard and a different template. But typically, you get a women's title match, a men's title match, a tag title match, another title match if we get into the era of the UK title or the North American Championship. But in this case, you would get like one or two fillers to fill out a five-card thing. In this show, there's only one title match, and that's the main event, which gives it a really harsh amount of focus, which is awesome. But also, it's because the NXT Men's Champion, Finn Balor, is in the Dusty Classic. Because the main event is an Iron Man match, all the other matches are 11 minutes or less, which is interesting, which makes it nice and bite-sized for somebody like me who's trying to cover it, but it means that a whole lot of people had to cram into a whole lot less time so that two people could have more time. That's not new, that's not different, that's nothing against Sasha Banks or Bayley, that's just the way time works. And this is why I've always said I like the short pay-per-views, but the restrictions of trying to fit somewhat of a TV format sort of rear their ugly head when you have a match that's long, everybody else loses a little bit. Also, little tiny minor point, this show also has the debut of Asuka. So that's something as well. We remember at the last show, we saw sitting in the audience with Sergeant Slaughter and somebody else was, world-renowned Japanese superstar Kana. Well, we've got Asuka now. Let's talk about it. The first match of the night, if you're not going to have your men's champion in the main event, because they usually are, let's be real, and he just main evented in Brooklyn, you put him in the first match because it's Balor and NXT champion at the time, Samoa Joe, taking on Dash and Dawson. Now, here's the thing. If you look at the brackets, if you look at the lower thirds and the Titantrons, and you listen to the announcers on the show on this particular night, they only refer to them as Dash and Dawson. In the Wikipedia article that I went and quickly perused before I came to talk to you guys, they are both referred to as the Mechanics and the Revival. We're talking about the team currently known as DIY, obviously, but I'm going to call them the Revival because that's what I know them as. So, there's not really my typical how did we get here thing, because it's a tournament. You get here by beating people. Balor and Joe beat Dawkins and Fulton and Enzo and Cass to get here. Now, think about this for a second. Dawkins is now one half of who we know as the Street Profits. Sawyer Fulton went on to be a member of Sanity for a brief time, and then I think he kind of fell into obscurity a little bit. Enzo and Cass, well, we know what happened to Enzo. He got fucked over by Me Too. And Big Cass is now Big Bill in AEW. And people are speculating that he's going to be a world champion. And he's not. He's great. Don't get me wrong. He's a good big guy. And he's got a redemption story that most people don't have. Tons of respect for the guy. I don't think AEW is going to put the world title on him. And that's just me. On the other side of the coin, Dash and Dawson beat the team of Elias and Tucker and the Vaudevillains. Now, the Vaudevillains are the Vaudevillains. Simon Gotch went on to get famous on YouTube making fun of Enzo, which is not great. And Matthew Raywalt, the former Aiden English, went on to be an awesome commentator for Impact, soon to once again be rebranded as TNA, which is exciting. We'll talk about that a different day. Elias Sampson, as he is here, would go on to just be called Elias and come to the main roster and kind of fail a lot. And Tucker was the old tag team partner of Otis Dozovic when they were the Heavy Machinery guys before Otis came to the main roster and got teamed up with Chad Gable, and now they have the Alpha Academy. So it's weird to see where these guys were back then. Finn Balor, for all that I praise in the past couple of episodes, the Demon entrance and how it looks at pay-per-view and how it looks in a big arena and all that kind of thing, I've been there for it. I was there when he fought the debuting Fiend. It's awesome. The other side of that coin, and I want to send a quick shout-out to one of my old co-hosts, Kristen, who coined this phrase. The other side of the Demon Finn Balor in NXT was what she called Rockstar Douchebag Finn Balor, which is exactly what he is here, and it's awesome. It was when all of his graphics and iconography said Balor Club. They were trying to sort of skim the line of sort of referencing the Bullet Club without referencing the Bullet Club. And Revival had that cool Say Yeah entrance music that I thought was really cool as well. It's really, I like DIY. I like DIY no matter where they are. Don't get me wrong. DIY, sorry, not DIY, FTR. There we go. Getting my acronyms fucked up again. I like FTR wherever they are. FTR currently killing it in AEW. Good for them. Revival, as they were here, killed it in NXT. They were not used, I will admit it. I'll be the first one to put my hands up and admit it. They were not used to their full potential in main roster WWE. They did the Usi Hot stuff, and they were shaving each other's backs, and it got very, very strange very, very quickly. But this is one of those things. You guys know how I feel about AEW, but FTR are killing it over there. It's awesome. It's absolutely awesome. Dash starts with a cheap shot to Finn Balor to break the ice and start the match, which is, it makes sense. You want to take out the world champion if you're stuck in a tag team match with him early on in the night where you know you've got at least one more match to look forward to. The brawl is with Joe. Joe mauls him in the corner, right hands by Dash and a double team by Dash and Dawson. Boots and shots by Dawson and a mud hole by Dash and an uppercut. Corner enziguri by Joe. Hot tag to Finn Balor, who comes in and hits an enziguri of his own, but he gets a... shotgun dropkick by Balor, and he gets a chop block by Dawson. And then for the next, it feels like forever, Revival using quick tags, using frequent tags, using constant tags, just double teaming the fuck out of Finn Balor's leg and how. I want to send a quick shout out to commentary at this particular point in time where they really did drive home a story that is always, it's always up for debate. If you've got a tag team match, who's going to do better in a tag team match? A tag team or two singles main eventers? Because Joe versus Dash or Finn versus Dawson, no debate whatsoever as to who's going to win either of those matches. But put them together where teamwork is a factor and you got two guys that know each other like the back of each other's hands, no pun intended, don't be weird, versus two guys that are individually awesome like Balor and Joe, but don't necessarily make their bread and butter as a tag team. It's always a debate between wrestling fans. If you got say you're main eventing a pay-per-view and it's Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock versus the Legion of Doom, there's an argument to be made that the Legion of Doom should beat them. They wouldn't because it's Austin and Rock, so that's a terrible example that I've pulled out of my ass. But it is what it is, and it's one of those stories in wrestling that's old and never gets old at the same time. Backbreaker elbow drop combination by the Revival. So many almost tag moments. For Balor getting to Joe before he finally gets the hot tag. He limps to the corner. After he gets the hot tag to Joe, he sits in the corner and sells it like crazy. It's Finn Balor, and he's even more lanky and wiry back then than he is now, and I'm not saying that as a bad thing, but it means when he's selling a limb, he's really selling the fuck out of a limb like Jack fucking Skellington, which is awesome. Joe comes in, house of fire, strikes, boots, snap slams, body slams, slams in the corner, hits the muscle buster. Finn Balor goes for the tag. We know what he's going to do. We know it's going to be the coup de grace. We know the coup de grace is going to fuck with his leg even more. So even his own partner is saying, hey man, are you sure? He's like, yeah, I'm sure. Hits the coup de grace, gets the win. Balor and Joe get the win, and they move on to face the winner of Jason Jordan and Chad Gable versus Baron Corbin and Rhino. Awesome opener. Awesome opener. Great storytelling. You've left yourself a linchpin for storytelling in the future, because now Finn Balor goes to the next round with an injury. This opener did everything that an opening match absolutely needs to do. And before we find out who's going to take on Samoa Joe and Finn Balor in the finals of the Dusty Cup, we take a moment, commentary takes a moment, I should say, to thank Bring Me the Horizon for giving them two pay-per-view themes for tonight's pay-per-view, and they use that as a little bit of a segue into some footage of NXT and its superstars being live at the Louder Than Life Rock Festival. And it just made me remember, they used to do cool shit like this. NXT UK did it as well. They did, what was it, the Download Festival, or there was another one that I can't remember the name of now, where when there was music festivals, they would just like set up a tent at the festival and they would just like do some matches and do some integrated with some other entertainment that was going on at the time. I thought that was really cool. I thought that was really neat. I thought at the time they were still small enough that that was just a cool thing that could happen. For those of you that know the GTA here in Southern Ontario, the first and only time I've ever been to the Vaughn Comic Con was because they asked Destiny Wrestling to do some random matches in there. That's where I was introduced to Jesse Bieber. And yes, his gimmick is exactly what you think it is. And yes, it's fucking awesome. As Simon Miller would say, goofy wrestling for life. Check out Jesse Bieber if you're in the Southern Ontario area. Really, really fun wrestler to watch. But I thought it was kind of cool. Like, Comic Con's happening just over there. We got some wrestling over here. The music festival, I wish that kind of shit happened here. I wish I could go to the Rockstar Energy tour that used to come through here and just, like, there's the stage, there's some bands I want to see, turn over here and see some wrestlers. That's really fucking cool. I really wish they did stuff like that still. I know they did the SmackDown thing where, like, there was some kind of rap concoction, convention, whatever thing, and they just brought a wrestling ring out on stage and it just looked awkward as shit. But as much as I didn't care for that, as much as it didn't come off that well on TV, I did still have to applaud them for trying to do something different. Something that a lot of people are talking right now is the big fucking, what the hell is it called? The big Vegas sphere that they've just erected that's like a screen on the inside and the outside. And the minute that AEW, WWE, TNA, whoever gets a chance to do something in that sphere, it's going to be cool. It's probably going to be wacky as hell, but it's going to be cool. I hope it happens. I hope, you know, stuff like Jericho doing the Jericho cruise with AEW, I should say. Like, stuff like that is cool. The Download Festival stuff is cool. The Louder Than Life Festival footage from here is cool. And I keep saying cool, but, like, that's really all it is, and that's all wrestling really needs to be. So that was really nice to look back at. The second last match in the Dusty Classic was, again, they don't have the name American Alpha yet, but it's Jason Jordan and Chad Gable taking on Rhino and Baron Corbin. Gable was over. Holy fuck. He's getting over now. He's getting his props now and his flowers now, which is awesome. He had that match with Gunther not too long ago, and he's getting closer and closer and closer to that Intercontinental Championship, which is great. But I forgot how much Gable was over here. Like, they were doing the Gable you suck chants, except instead of saying you suck, they were saying Gable. That was fine. He had the towel that he used to come out with, kind of like John Cena, but it said ready, willing, and Gable instead of hustle, loyalty, and respect. That kind of cheesy stuff always made me smile. Corbin and Rhino are a team because they had fun beating the shit out of each other, and they basically said, why don't we have fun beating the shit out of other people? Which is awesome. It's very reminiscent of Cesaro and Sheamus beating the shit out of each other, and then Mick Foley turning them into a tag team and them becoming the Bar, which was also awesome. Sheamus is still great, gave Edge his WWE retirement match, and Cesaro, I don't know what happened to Cesaro. I'm an asshole, it's fine. How did we get here? Jason Jordan and Chad Gable beat the team of Neville and Solomon Crowe, and then went on to beat the team of Ryder and Mojo Rawley. Baron Corbin and Rhino beat The Ascension and DIY. You guys know what I think about DIY. They're about to get back together as I'm recording this. I don't know when this is probably going out in December, but I'm recording it on August 28th. DIY is about to reunite on this week's Halloween episode of Raw to take on Imperium. DIY are great. They get way more shit than they deserve. Ascension were also cool. And if you look at my early episodes of this series, you'll say Ascension was great. I don't know what they did wrong. They tag teamed them up with Stardust stardust and turned them into the wasteland. And that was weird, but that was weird for everybody involved. I'm not a Cody guy. I mean, I'm becoming a Cody guy because he does, like, drunk press conferences now, so that's kind of fun. But I wasn't a Cody guy up until very, very recently. But I'm even going to say that taking the Ascension and Cody Rhodes and turning him into Stardust and turning that trio into the wasteland was weird. We shouldn't have done it. Moving on. The Hype Bros, Ryder and Mojo Rawley. I don't know what the hell happened to Mojo Rawley. Zack Ryder is now Matt Cardona, and he's, like, the deathmatch indie king guy. Neville is now Pac, who sometimes shows up in AEW, and Solomon Crow is Sammy Callahan, who's also rumored at the time of recording to be going to AEW. I wish he would come back to TNA or come to WWE, but that's just me. So again, you just look at for a show like this, you just look at something as simple as the brackets and how we got here, and look at where all these people are now. It's kind of cool, kind of fun. One of the biggest things I enjoy about doing this particular series. As I say, Gable coming out with the Ready, Willing, and Gable towel always gets a pop. Jordan and Corbin, I can speak, I swear, start the match. Jordan gets tossed out in the early going, steamrolled by Baron. They really did book Baron Corbin like a steamroller at the time, and it's really... You weren't supposed to like him, but I didn't like him because I was getting into guys like Johnny Gargano, guys like Tommaso Ciampa, guys like Chad Gable, etc. So when Corbin came along and destroyed them, you weren't supposed to like, this guy's lame, get him out of the way, I want to see all these cool people. Looking back on it now, this was pretty expertly executed. Like, and then when you look at when they brought him to the main roster, and they made him the boss, and then they made him the happy guy, and then they made him the poor guy, and then they gave him the king gimmick, because everybody needs a king gimmick, but... The way they presented him here, when NXT was still like WWE's version of an indie and he was playing like the indie killer, it was really brilliant, and I really wish I had realized it at the time. Body shots in the corner by Rhino and a few knockdowns. Gable and Jordan work together on the arm of Rhino because Rhino is fucking huge. They had a double overhead suplex into a pin attempt by Jordan, and then Jordan manages to catch his arm over the rope into the over the rope arm bar. Rhino chops Gable out of the ring, who then gets speared into the LED apron by Baron Corbin. Still don't know to this day how I feel about the LED screens on the outside of the ring. I'm pretty sure I don't like them. Chinlock by Rhino, who tags in Baron Corbin and takes over that chinlock into a neck vise. Boot and a near fall by Corbin, a slam by Rhino, and he misses the headbutt. Rhino going to the top rope always looks a bit awkward, but that's okay. Let him do what he wants to do. Jordan in, drop kicks for everybody, suplexes in a corner spear. That almost elastic-looking corner spear that Jason Jordan used to do. Man, what we missed out on with him getting injured. He's a backstage guy. He's still got himself a job. Absolutely happy for the guy. But it's sort of like a Corey Graves situation, character-wise, is like, what could we have gotten in the ring if they hadn't gotten injured? Deep six by Corbin always looks great. Belly-to-belly by Rhino is awesome. Chaos Theory suplex on Corbin by Gable looks as impressive as it sounds. But then Baron Corbin comes in, and Jesus fucking Christ, he doesn't only hit an end of days, he hits a full tilt-a-whirl into the end of days, plants Gable like a fucking tent spike, and gets them a spot in the finals. Corbin and Rhino win the match. Corbin and Rhino are going to go up against Balor and Joe in the finals, and it's going to be awesome. Two indie guys versus Rhino and the indie killer. What could possibly go wrong? But we've got two more matches to talk about before we get to the finals of the Dusty Cup. One of them is the debut of Asuka. As I mentioned earlier, Asuka debuted... Sorry, I shouldn't say debuted. We first saw Asuka sitting in the crowd, as I say, with Sergeant Slaughter at TakeOver Brooklyn, which was a choice. She went on to then, as they did back then, much like they did with Hideo Itami, she had her contract signing in the ring. It was disrespected and interrupted by Dana Brooke and Emma. William Regal says, hey, you made your bed, now lie in it. Now you have to debut against Asuka. Now, Asuka was a psychopath, and I loved Asuka the very first time I saw her, because during her entrance, all you need to see in her first entrance is where she takes off the, I don't know what those types of masks are called, and I don't want to offend anybody, so I just say, the entrance mask that she has when she takes it off, and the evil smile she has on her face, even though she's a good guy, is all you really need to see. They gave us a brief, and I say brief, like 30 second, like flash clip of all the things she's done in a bunch of other places. I'm assuming they're in, like, feds in Japan because of the, you know, some of the writing on the wall, some of the writing in the rings or whatever. I don't know. I didn't look. I thought it was cool. It's worth noting anytime you see footage in WWE that's not footage of WWE. So that's kind of cool. Asuka looks like a psychopath. Dana Brooke. You guys know I always love Dana Brooke. Friggin' all the stories you hear about her behind the scenes and all the hard work that she's put in. And the fact that she is, like, athletic as hell, and the fact that they never really found a proper use for her in NXT or on the main roster. And she's out here with Emma, and the thing that ties the two of them together now is they've both been recently released. As I'm putting this out here together, Emma was released after helping them promote the fact that Elimination Chamber is in Australia next year. That's a little too much. It's Asuka's first match, and she's already got the Asuka's gonna kill you chant. So let's get into it. Asuka goes for the handshake, you know, as the babyface, and Dana shoves it away. There's a collar and elbow tie up. They trade arm bars. They trade limb control. And there's a cheap shot by Dana Brooke and a slap. And the smile goes across Asuka's face. And the crowd knows what's going on because the chant goes from Asuka's gonna kill you to you fucked up. Kick combos and a hip attack by Asuka. They trade some forearms. Asuka rides an armbar for a long time before going back to the kicks. There's a trip on the outside by Emma. She doesn't trip her off the apron. She just trips her so that her foot kind of gets caught in the apron skirt a little bit. But that's enough for a second rope hangman's neckbreaker by Dana. I can speak, I swear. Corner spear and a lariat by Dana, body scissor by Dana is countered into a knee bar by Asuka that really looks like it wrecks, not gonna lie. German suplex and back to the arm for Asuka. Asuka backfists Emma, there we go, off the apron so that she can then turn her attention back to Dana. And she does this thing because she locks in the Asuka lock, but she gets her real, and she breaks her down real slow like. She has her in a headlock. And she just sort of wiggles her around a little bit until she's, like, down to her knees, down to her, you know, all fours, and then breaks her down before finally taking her fully down to the mat. It's boa constrictor-esque. And I know that that's a cliche that's used a lot in wrestling for other people, but it really is. She gets a hold of her and then breaks her down bit by bit by bit. And then there's a quick tap out, obviously. She tries to attack her post-match and gets backfisted for her efforts. And then there is a really long stare down outside the ring between Asuka and Emma. Now, I can't remember off the top of my head when Asuka and Emma go at it, but I'm sure it's going to be great, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it. Emma, remember, when we talk about the Women's Revolution and how the Women's Revolution started in NXT, and it actually started before the Four Horsewomen, it started with Emma and Paige. So, Emma, much like Dana Brooke, maybe more so because she's done a lot in a lot more places, criminally underlooked by WWE, and that's not great. I'm a big WWE fan, I'm a big WWE supporter in a lot of ways, but there's two ladies in this match, and one of them's not even in the match that just got released by WWE recently, and that's really dumb. WWE failed, maybe TKO can pick it up. I really don't know, because I haven't really seen any difference since the TKO takeover. It's fine, don't worry about it. Now, the Asuka debut was an important thing, and it was a sort of a pinch point moment in wrestling, so it had its place on the card. Now, when we get to the next match, with respect to both guys involved, I really do watch this match with sort of a let's get it over with because I want to see the end of the tournament mentality. And that's not a reflection on Tyler Breeze, and it's not a reflection on Apollo Crews. We saw Apollo Crews debut at TakeOver Brooklyn against Ty Dillinger. It was awesome. Tyler Breeze at this point is considered like an NXT original, although that never really became a thing. And he does what one of the things that heels do a lot. He plays the card of, I've been here for so long, I've put in so much work, and all these other flash in the pans come in and they get all the attention because they're the flavor of the week, where's my turn, da 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 da. I mean, fair enough, he was involved in the title picture in the first two takeovers. If you don't believe me, go back and listen to the other episodes in this series. And then he's kind of become like the opener, the introduction guy. Like I've always said, he's the Dolph Ziggler of NXT. He's the guy that you put the guy that you're pushing against, which is kind of shit, not gonna lie. But, and Apollo Crews is just athletic as hell. Tyler Breeze is entertaining as hell and not a bad athlete in his own right. Collar and elbow tie up and a headlock by Breeze, a takedown by Crews, a dropkick by Crews. And here's the thing. with wrestling the way it is now, and a good match being the standard, and a great match being the standard, to go back to this and say, oh my god, look at a guy the size of Apollo Crews doing a dropkick, it's like, doesn't stick out as much as it used to. I get what they're going for, and they're not wrong about Apollo Crews, but it's one of those, don't pretend like that's something that not a lot of people can just do in the standard of today. Little bit of a pinch point there for me, but the Apollo Crews hits a pounce on the outside as well. I don't know what Alpha Male Monty Brown in TNA. I don't know if he was in TNA at this point, but anytime I see somebody do the pounce, even when Keith Lee started doing the pounce in later days NXT, it always made me think of the Alpha Male Monty Brown, because I remember it being distinctly different from a spear, because a spear, you're taking somebody down, with the pounce, you're almost taking somebody up, and I always thought it was really, really cool. Stalling vertical suplex by Crews is just insane. He just walks around with Breeze like he's carrying fucking groceries. Back elbow by Crews. They trade some body shots on the outside, and he tosses Crews into the LED board. Again, I'm not going to say whether I'm 100% a fan of the LED boards. I don't think I am, but it's fine. Crossface with a post by Breeze when they get back into the ring. Breeze does, once again, what I tried to explain in TakeOver Brooklyn, where he wraps the guy's arm around his own head and then uses it to pull him down into a backbreaker. It kind of looks like he's making his opponent give himself a sling blade in a lot of ways. Don't know what it's called. They didn't know what to call it on commentary either, so it's fine. You get that whole thing on commentary where they don't know what to call it. Oh, that's one heck of a variation. You don't know what it's called, so you can't tell me what it's called. Sharpshooter by Breeze, which is awesome because he's actually Canadian, and back then a lot of people didn't know that, and it was one of those aha moments, which is fine. He works over Cruz's back some more. Hurricane Rana into mounted punches by Breeze looked sick. Supermodel kick by Breeze and a triangle dropkick. Power slam by Crews and a boot. He goes for that, gorilla press power slam. Or sorry, the gorilla press shooting. I can speak, I swear. The gorilla press into the back moonsault. But Breeze makes him pause by grabbing his foot and then gets his legs up. So he hits him with another boot and hits him with the toss powerbomb instead. For reasons. Crews gets the win, and as he's celebrating in the ring, we pan across the crowd once again to see Hideo Itami and Funaki. And I forgot to mention it before, but Kevin Nash is also in the crowd, which is nice. Alright, it's not the main event, but it's pretty damn close. It's the finals of the first ever Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. It is Joe and Balor, who won earlier on tonight, versus Corbin and Rhino, who won earlier tonight. We get a lot of playback of how they both won their matches earlier on in the night. We've had some backstage segments since the opening match with Finn Balor getting his leg looked at and whatever. We take a look one more time at how he injured himself, or how his opponents injured him, I guess we should say, in the first match. We get the announcement right before the match starts that Finn Balor's been cleared and he'll be in the match, which is a little over the top. But fine, we're giving it the real sports feel. I guess that's the terminology we use these days. But it is Joe, Balor, Corbin, Rhino. It's kind of wild, once again, to see where Joe is right now succeeding in AEW. Where Balor is right now being part of one of the coolest things on the main roster right now with Judgment Day. With Corbin recently just having his re-emergence in NXT that I think is going amazingly. And with Rhino, who is just killing it everywhere. I think he's in Impact right now, that's soon to become TNA again. But Rhino, you know, he was Raw, SmackDown. He came back to NXT after a trip to TNA, and he started obviously in ECW. Don't know, somebody tell me down in the box below, was he ever in WCW? I feel like that's not a thing, but maybe it's a thing. Rhino kind of exists everywhere. Rhino is one of those wrestlers that doesn't seem out of place anywhere. He's sort of the odd one out here, where you've got Corbin, who's done the whole NXT rebirth thing, which, I mean, let's be fair, we're going to probably talk about it later on in this series. Finn Balor did the same thing. Samoa Joe went up to the main roster from NXT after his time in TNA to become a wrestler, then become a commentator, then come back to NXT for a little bit before going over to AEW. And I think in AEW, he's the ROH champion, because that makes sense. Look at all the paths and crossways and I don't know what kind of terminology you want to use. Do you want to think of it as like a subway station? Like NXT was the union station. People did a lot of things before coming into NXT. People did a lot of things coming out of NXT. I know I'm getting repetitive on that point, but it is a really cool part of doing a series like this to see everybody, to see all those different directions crossing paths 8 years ago at Full Sail. At a takeover, it's kind of cool. Balor starts the match against Rhino, sort of to make a statement, like, if you think I'm going to be the weak link in this match, you're not going to do it. The test of strength clearly takes Balor to the corner, because look at Rhino and look at Balor. Corbin kicks out the leg, Balor responds with a drop kick, because, you know, you want to kick me in the leg, I will kick you with my leg. Joe gets in, he's got strikes like crazy, and he knocks Corbin into the corner. A tree slam by Corbin on Samoa Joe ain't no small accomplishment. I'm just saying, mounted punches on Joe as well. Rhino into brawl with Samoa Joe. Corner gore, belly to belly suplex. Two big guys. You know, it's the Biggie Langston special. It's two big beefy men slapping man meat. Choking the ropes by Rhino and a corner shot by Corbin. Corner enziguri by Joe, who tags in Balor, not to be outdone. Top rope enziguri with the bad leg, but he eats a shot to the knee on the outside by Rhino because he's paying attention to Corbin, and he takes him out from the outside. Corbin works the leg around the post, Bret Hart style, brings him back into the ring and stomps on it. Deep six by Corbin and sling blade by Finn Balor. Two of the prettiest moves in wrestling, back-to-back, you gotta love it. Joe comes in with strikes, boots, sentons, and STOs. There's a gore by Rhino, a tornado DDT by Balor, because fuck you, thinking my leg is bad. Muscle buster, coup de grace on one leg. Balor and Joe get the win. We get a nice feel-good moment after this. We get the trophy. I thought that this was the takeover where they brought in the little mini pyro boxes that they put in the ring sometimes. Full Sail couldn't have pyro, and that's why you got a lot of people with smoke entrances. Like Becky Lynch doing the steampunk entrance with the smoke instead of the pyro was the key example of that. She's not on this show, but it's the only example I can think of. But in later iterations of the Dusty Rhodes Classic, or any big tournament end, they had the little tiny pyro boxes that I guess were small enough to sit in the ring and not be against the no pyro in Full Sail rule. Didn't have that. What they did have, however, was Eden Styles, who is, of course, Brandi Rhodes, along with Cody Rhodes, Dustin Rhodes, a couple of other people. They bring in the big trophy. We've all seen the trophy. It's just a typical trophy cup, and in the middle there's like a platinum set of dusty boots and all that kind of thing. It is really cool because you've got Finn Balor, who's either playing the demon or playing a really sarcastic, like, rock star douchebag, as I said earlier. And you got Samoa Joe, who's just the consummate wrecking machine, and to have them both sort of break out of those roles and have the big hug and have the big hug with other people in the ring that are involved, etc. Really, really cool. You don't see Samoa Joe hug people very often in his career. Look, just think of the persona that he puts out there, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. But it would be like if Undertaker, in the height of his pomp as the Undertaker, had come out and done a shoot interview. It would have been weird, right? This is kind of like that, but it's also totally acceptable. Like I say, Dustin Rhodes is out there, Cody Rhodes is out there. Cody Rhodes gives a short speech about how his dad, you know, was here with all of us today and all that kind of thing, and how his dad liked John Wayne, and John Wayne had this quote that there's some things that you just can't run from, and we can't run from what happened to Dusty Rhodes. And he sort of reaches out to the crowd. He does kind of a version of the Dusty Rhodes, like, my hands are touching your hands thing, where he says, I think I speak for all of us when I say, tonight we are all Rhodeses. And then we get a Rhodes chant, and it's all very wonderful, and, you know, they're posing with the trophy and whatever, and it's funny because Samoa Joe does that, the pinky finger and thumb salute that he always does, and Finn Balor just sort of casually sneaks in a Bullet Club Too Sweet in there as well, which is nice. It's funny because while they're doing that, it keeps cutting to the audience, so I can't help but think that there was somebody in production being like, no, we can't have the Bullet Club stuff on screen. I don't know if that's actually a thing, but it makes me laugh to think about. This was just overall a really, really nice moment. It was really cool. Cody Rhodes just going out there and being Cody Rhodes, because I think, I could be wrong, but I think at this time was still, he was doing the Stardust stuff. I can't recall, and I'm not looking at the corresponding WWE stuff when I'm doing these NXT shows, so I'm not going to pretend that I even know what Cody Rhodes and Dustin Rhodes were doing at this point in time. But it's weird to see Cody Rhodes without the bleach blonde hair and the, you know, the Homelander jacket. But nice. There's only so many different ways I can say this. This was a really nice, really cool thing. The entire existence of the Dusty Classic is kind of cool. But to have the Rhodes boys there to do it and to sort of set the standard for what would happen a lot of years in the Dusty Cup, which is just the random thrown together tag team. The other one that I really remember is, was it Ricochet and Aleister Black were a heck of a team? And then they were a team on the main roster, and then Aleister Black went somewhere else, and we don't know. Really, really good, but like really good plant the flag as in this is what the Dusty Rhodes Classic is, and this is what the Dusty Rhodes Classic feels like, and an amazing precursor to the main event. And now for the main event. Now for the marathon of note-taking on my part, so this is probably going to be a mess. Please excuse me in advance. Tried to cram a lot of details into this, but it is Sasha Banks, Bayley 2 for the NXT Women's Championship. Now, what happened? Brooklyn, we just talked about it in the last episode. Bayley defeated Sasha at TakeOver Brooklyn, the first ever TakeOver outside of Full Sail. It was huge. It was her big moment. They bicker. They went back and forth. The respect was there, but the rivalry was still there as well. September 16th on NXT, William Regal comes out to announce that there will, in fact, be a rematch. It will be at TakeOver Respect. It will be the main event. And it will be a 30-minute Iron Man match. To which the crowd, that night and this night, obnoxiously chant Iron Woman. But we can get over that. I get it. Huge. Historical. It wouldn't be today. Because today, WWE ain't perfect. But WWE does more for women's wrestling than any other major company out there. But at the time, we're talking 8 years ago. Like, this is not hyperbole. This was huge. This led to these two same women main eventing Raw. These two main women going to the main roster and main eventing Hell in a Cell, I believe. Or no, wait, that was Sasha and Charlotte. But the case may be, it was huge. There's people doing stuff now and it's like, oh, it's historic. It's like, well, no, this is more normal now. Still steps to go, for sure. Don't get me wrong. Don't let me tell you that things are exactly equal, because they're not. I get it. But back then, for this kind of history to be made, for this kind of history to be made on this version of NXT that was basically seen, as I've said before, as WWE's version of an indie, was pretty fucking fantastic. In throughout this match, they were chanting women's wrestling, they were chanting both these women, they were chanting Iron Woman, and they were chanting Better Than Raw, which doesn't even really work as a chant, but it shows you the following that NXT had at the time, and it shows you that the people in the house that night knew how historic this was. That's pretty fucking cool. Becky, Charlotte, Lita, and Stephanie McMahon are all sitting on the front row. When they make their entrances, you see Bayley actually flash the Four Horsewomen sign to Becky and Charlotte, who are sitting at ringside, which is always cool. I love even Sasha, who you guys know I'm not a fan of, fantastic in this match, we're about to talk about it. Even Sasha, who I'm not really a fan of, the interaction between any of these four women was always magic. I always say it didn't start with the Four Horsewomen, it started with Paige and Emma, and I still believe that. I believe that to this very day. But it doesn't change the fact that the interaction between these four women on NXT was akin to the SmackDown 6 in the Paul Heyman days. You get any combination of these women in there, or all of them, when we did the Fatal 4-Way, when we did the tags, when they switched their alliances around and all that. It was always good. It was just always good. So, when you saw the little winks and the nods, and you saw that the Bayley superfan, Izzy, was sitting at the crowd there with Bayley's parents, and it's weird to see now, because that girl has gone on to become a wrestler herself now, and it becomes one of those things. It becomes like seeing the old pictures of AJ Lee fangirling over Lita, and then getting to wrestle in WWE later on. It's one of those things. It's very, very cool. Very, very historical moment. And I won't, or I'll try, not to let my opinion of Sasha Banks overshadow the fact that both of these women had a fantastic match on the night, and the fact that this history that they were making on this night probably should have happened 20 years ago. Like, let's be real for a second. But anyways, let's get into this. As I say, my notes are a mess. If I stumble a little bit, you guys are going to have to apologize. Or sorry, you guys are going to have to accept my apology, not apologize to me. That would be strange. The fan reaction and the immensity of the moment was so cool at the beginning of this match. And it's easy to see because they've got the timer right behind them, because it is an Iron Man match. They don't touch for a full minute. And it doesn't seem out of place for them to not touch for a minute. Anyways, collar and elbow tie-up and a headlock by Sasha and a series of near falls in the early going. Front face lock by Bayley and a shoulder tackle and a near fall of her own. Both fight for a backslide. Becky works over the arm and works the arm bar into a cradle as a pin attempt. Dropkick by Sasha. Two overhead arm drags by Bayley. A head scissor by Sasha and a top rope arm drag. The bank statement is blocked by Bayley in the early going, but there's a hair takedown by Sasha. A second rope arm drag and a corner forearm by Bayley. A baseball slide drop kick out of the ring by Bayley. A bulldog by Bayley. And Sasha tries for a pinfall with her feet on the ropes. The referee knocks her feet off and doesn't let her get the pin, but she backs up against the referee so that she's actually blocking the referee with her body, gets an eye rake or a finger poke or whatever you want to call it, and turns that into a quick roll-up for the first pin at 8 minutes and 35 seconds. Kicks and stops to the back of Sasha. They trade some mounted punches on the ground for a while. It kind of looks like they're having a bit of a gator roll type situation. Sasha eats the turnbuckle hard. Bayley does the same. Snake eyes for Bayley and a forearm by Sasha. Bayley gets a Bayley to belly out of nowhere and gets the second pin at 10:52. Sasha bails to the outside and swings Bayley into the steps. Tosses Bayley into the ring, only to toss her out of the ring once more and swing her into the steps two more times. Two more times for the good times. Throws her back into the ring, takes her back out of the ring, walks her all the way up the ramp, and slams her head first into the Tron. Oh, yes. So while Bayley's down, she goes down, and this is where you get the moment that was memed to death. Little tiny Izzy Bayley superfan Sasha Banks steals the headgear. The kid is bawling. She walks, takes a single lap around the ring with the girl's headband on, and we see the camera slowly pan in to Izzy kid bawling her eyes out. This is the entire encapsulation of everybody's hopes and dreams for Bayley in this one fan. Awesome moment. Don't like Sasha Banks, but that was pretty fucking cool. People still talk about it today. What can I say? Now, what gets lost in all this is while that is going on, because Bayley's had her bell rung by the Titantron there, she also gets counted out. So Sasha Banks gets another victory in her favor at the 14:07 mark. Back in the ring, Sasha works over the back with a backbreaker. Boots by Bayley. Walls of Jericho by Sasha stepping on Bayley's head. Oh, yes. Walls of Jericho lasts a little bit too long. Bayley's actually able to sort of wiggle her way into a counter Hurricane Rana, which gets her a pin at 17 minutes 20, tying it up at 2 apiece. Rolling axe handles by Bayley. She's starting to get pissed off now. She does something here off of the axe handle. I think she's going for a sling blade. It's kind of messy. She kind of just throws Sasha's face at the ground and we move on. It was another one of those what a maneuver type situations. Corner spear and two corner elbows by Bayley, and then she hits an elbow from the top. Sasha in the Tree of Woe eats another Bayley elbow. Bayley in the Tree of Woe gets the Sasha double knees that would have normally gone to the midsection. Sasha eats post shoulder first, and how? Bayley uses the steps on Sasha's hand, hearkening back to their match in Brooklyn. And I can't see what my writing says. Oh yeah, they get it back in the ring. She grabs the injured arm and does a hangman off the second rope on the arm instead of the neck because we're working the arm. It's all wonderful. Step up lariat off of the steps by Bayley onto Sasha, but then she gets mule kicked backwards into sort of that indent, that triangular indent in the front of the steps, and she just sort of collapses and crunches together into that. Sasha Banks back in the ring. Sasha Banks, I will give her credit where it's due. She's got a hell of a suicide dive, except when Bayley catches her in midair and turns it into a Bayley to belly on the floor. Oh, yes. Second rope Bayley to belly gets a near fall that was only saved by the ropes. Belly to belly by Sasha to rub salt in the wounds does not get a near fall. She locks in the bank statement, and Bayley you know, channeling her inner Pete Dunne, Bailey gets out of Sasha Banks' bank statement by doing finger stuff. Then she reverses it, puts Sasha Banks in her own bank statement, locks up both arms so that Sasha Banks has to verbally submit at the 29 minutes and 57 seconds mark. Bailey wins. Bailey retains her championship with a score of 3-2. And my opinion of Sasha Banks out the window at this point, this was fucking phenomenal. Everybody cried. It was all wonderful. And I don't say that in a bad way. It was absolutely deserved. The minute that that third count went down, the minute that the bell rang, the immense historic nature of the moment comes crashing down on everybody. Sasha sort of collapses out of the ring, gives Bailey the ring because she's still the champion. She's crying in the ring. Sasha's crying out of the ring, unbeknownst to all of us, while the replays are happening. The entire NXT roster falls out to the entranceway. Triple H is out there with, you know, flowers for both women that he can't give them to Sasha because Sasha Banks has literally crumpled to the floor under the weight of the moment, which is fine. I'm not a cold-hearted person. That is a beautiful thing. She's achieved something great along with Bailey. Bailey's in the ring. She's holding it together a bit better. Sasha Banks has always been known to be an emotional person. And no, that's not a bad thing. But she's sort of being helped up by the other people that are on the rampway. They've given Bailey the ring because she's the winner. Sasha's on her way out to the main roster. Bailey is the one that's going to carry the banner for the brand, carry the championship for the brand. So she's the one that gets to hold up her belt in the ring, get the flowers from Triple H, and get Triple H raising her hand in victory to close out the show. Fantastic match. Unprecedented at the time, historical step forward for women's wrestling in North American mainstream wrestling. You can't take it away from them. Even if I don't like Sasha Banks, even if I changed my mind and hated Bayley, you couldn't take it away from these women on this particular night. Really, really cool to see, like I say, Charlotte and Becky getting to be at ringside as well. Because while this was sort of the culmination of the Four Horsewomen story in NXT, because after this, the only one that was left was Bayley, it was the four of them that brought it to that point. Stephanie McMahon being out there, people are going to grumble about that, but it is what it is. And Lita being there as sort of a historical figure that, in a very different way, laid down all the groundwork for all the work that the ladies in NXT did was awesome as well. It was always cool to see Lita and Trish and Molly Holly and a couple others sort of like say, hey, congrats on successfully doing what we weren't able to do back in the day. Like, I don't want to say they're being like proud parents, but they kind of are. Am I being a sap at this point? Probably. This was awesome. This was absolutely awesome. No matter what you think about anybody, it's still weird for me to look there and see Sami Callihan standing in the background while they're helping Sasha Banks back up to her feet. I'm not going to lie, but hats off to both of them. This is fucking fantastic. I said that this show really breaks the mold of, like, this championship gets a match and this championship gets a match and this championship gets a match. And it had the three matches for the Dusty Cup, which was also very important, very emotional, very meaningful. But this entire show existed for this match, and the match delivered. The match delivered by far and wide margins. This was, like, anti-diva wrestling. And considering WWE are the ones that started calling them divas, and the fact that NXT is a WWE product, that's kind of mind-blowing. Really, really enjoyed this. It's sort of a step out of the natural. We will get on to TakeOver London. We will get on to TakeOver Dallas. And then we will come back to Full Sail one more time for NXT TakeOver, the end of the beginning. I hope you guys are loving this series. I'm loving doing it. I'm loving the retrospective. I'm loving the, oh my God, where is so-and-so now? They were all here together on this one night. And you've seen me do that throughout this episode. I'm really loving this series. I really hope you guys are too. Please, more than anything else I do on this channel, please give me some feedback on these NXT Rewind segments, episodes, whatever you want to call it, because I really want to know what you guys think. Anyways, thanks for listening. I've been Spaz, your YWC Reality Check. Subscribe up there, talk down there, start a conversation, keep all these conversations going. Don't be a stranger. I will talk to each and every last one of you later, but for right now, I am tagging out.